CIUT 89.5 FM encourages all of our listeners to stay informed about the status of the COVID-19 virus and how it could potentially impact you. CIUT FM recommends that you visit reputable online sites to keep abreast of the latest news and any actions or directives that officials may be delivering. For more information and current updates about the COVID-19 virus, the following resources are made available to you. From Toronto Board of Health, visit www.toronto.ca. From Ontario Ministry of Health, please go to www.ontario.ca. For federal updates, you may go to www.canada.ca. CIUT-FM will continue to play its role as a community radio partner to ensure that you have the information you may require to keep yourself protected and safe. CIUT 89.5 FM, bringing you the sound and news of your city.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And of course, we're broadcasting under special conditions, the time of coronavirus. And everybody is doing what we can to cover the news, provide comment. Circumstances aren't as they were. Of course, if you're listening, for Phil Conlon is also part of our programming, and Braden and Mick, and I have to say we miss them all, and but we're very proud of the fact we're able to get our programming out. A lot of people are trying to choose poems and songs and things because, of course, we can't do it in the usual way. I thought it might be appropriate to read something from Bertolt Brecht. Seems to me timely. And it's called In Praise of Learning. Bertolt Brecht, by the way, got in an awful lot of trouble because of this poem. When they discovered that he was living in California and writing for Hollywood, aspiring to write for Hollywood. I don't know that he really got a lot of work. He was scratching out a life at the end after World War II, and Bertolt Brecht, the outstanding playwright of Germany and the world, was, as they say, trying to get a living in California. Anyhow, they called him before the House Un-American Activities Committee for clearly un-American activities, such as advocating equality of races and the rights of labor, and for socialism, such things. And so naturally he had to be called and investigated by the congressional committee run by people whose candidacy had been supported by the Ku Klux Klan, that kind of thing. And when they got him there, they to put him on the spot, they read a poem to him and asked him if he had written it. And it was this poem. It's called Praise of Learning. And it was quite amusing because Bertolt Brecht said, when they read it to him, he said, well, that sounds familiar. But he says, you know, I don't speak English very well. And I wrote it in German, so I'm really not sure that's, you know, if you got it right. And so they read it to him again, and with a wonderful southern accent and flap reading, which actually made it, even to my mind, a better poem, because out of the mouth of a fool was coming a really interesting poem, I suppose a great poem, really. And Brecht handled that so well. By the way, in those days, everybody smoked, so he sat smoking his cigar and listening to the guy read the poem. And ultimately, he said he didn't think he could recognize it because he had written it in German. And the chairman of the committee couldn't figure out who this German guy was. So he decided that it was probably a mistake by the committee, in the sense that maybe that wasn't the poem, and so they gave up on it. And Brecht immediately left the country. As soon as his testimony was done, he took off to get out, and he went to Socialist East Germany, which had established an anti-fascist government and one that banned Nazism and devoted itself to providing work and education for a devastated people who, of course, been crushed by their own Nazi leadership, which had ruined their lives, of course, destroyed a good portion of humanity in the process. So Brecht knew that his work really should be there, and that's where he went and established a theater. I'm coming to the poem. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about the poem. But also, there was a kind of a nice note in my mind. Someone saw him as he was departing the country. Might have been Eric Bentley, who devoted an awful lot of time to maintaining and protecting the reputation and work of Bertolt Brecht. So anyway, the party said to him, "Oh, you're at the airport. Where are you going?" He said, "Well, I'm going to leave." Because he says, when they accuse you of stealing the Brooklyn Bridge, it's time to go. He always had that kind of laconic way of, in a wonderful manner. Someday we're going to have to devote a whole program to understanding who he was and his persona. If you've ever seen pictures of Brecht, he's quite a fascinating individual, because he's absolutely plain. There was none of the bohemian about him, at least in his looks. And he had a way of smiling and holding his cigar, which made him quite charming, pretty much the opposite of Winston Churchill, whom he hated. Okay, you asked about the poem. The poem is Praise of Learning. Learn the simplest things. For you, whose time has already come, it is never too late. Learn your ABCs. It is not enough, but learn them. Do not let it discourage you. Begin. You must know everything. You must take over the leadership. Learn in the asylum. Learn in prison. Learn in the kitchen. Learn if you're old. Seek out the school. You who are homeless, sharpen your wits. You who shiver, hungry, reach for the book. It is a weapon. You must take over the leadership. Don't be afraid of asking. Don't be won over. See for yourself. What you don't know yourself, you don't know. Add up the reckoning. It is you who must pay it. Put your finger on each item. Ask, how did this get here? You must take over the leadership. That's Bertolt Brecht, Praise of Learning. And that's a sentiment we all should have. Find out for yourself. Do your homework. Don't follow along in the trail of CNN, Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, the New York Times, Washington Post, or any of them. We've said on this program many times, particularly in a crisis, and this is a crisis, you should know what is going on, who's saying things. And particularly, let's focus on this corona matter as it's impacting the struggle of oppressed people, the poor, those who make society go, the workers, particularly the health workers. Who's leading us? And how do they get away with it, you might say, we ought to be saying. In my view, and this is the Taylor Report, is that the U.S. at the moment, which calls itself the world leader, and Canada certainly agrees that it is, and Britain salutes, and even Germany and France, they all do what Washington wants. And when I say Washington, I don't mean Trump. Trump is one, but he isn't the first to really sound his barbaric yop, to quote Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman says, "I sound my barbaric yop over the world. I don't know what he thought he was doing with that line, but it sure describes the people in the White House, and whether it's Obama, the cool guy, or both of the Bushes, who are not cool. And everybody used to say they were both idiots. Now they think that they're liberals and fine fellows, which is really tells you there's an odor coming out of the center of American power. So they are in a bind because as I do this program today, there are 15,000 deaths in the United States. 15,000 from the COVID-19. And the leaders are beginning to snap and bark and bite their own tails. In organizations which are internationally established, organization in cooperation with other peoples in the world. And the United States is a population of 325 million. It is not the world. It is one population, one nation, one state amongst many states. And they have a problem. They were told in January, early January, that there was a novel virus, coronavirus, and it was had a deadly bite. This thing was not on the chart, as it were, and so it had to be established what it was, but it was clearly dangerous. They were told this by international bodies, World Health Organization, but primarily by China. It was the Chinese government reported it. But because Obama and the Bushes and Trump thought there should be a pivot toward China, which is what they meant was actually a confrontation, ideological, political confrontation, because they realized that China has, in a very short period of time, gone from being a flattened, devastated, beaten up country from wars, both the war against Japan, in which they were our ally, and we were very grateful. And many American politicians had their political roots through their attachment to China. They were, again, I say, our ally. They fought the Japanese. The leading group in fighting the Japanese was the 8th Route, or the Red Army. But that country really suffered. And it was, and of course the concept was that when the war ended, it would be back under the heel of foreign powers. However, that was thwarted by the efforts of the Chinese masses under the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. Just that's a simple fact. And they went through quite a number of struggles. They eliminated warlordism, regional power bases for people with armies, little armies, and the old monarchical system. I think I left out a syllable, but we won't go back and get that. And so the idea was that they would come under, they would be a weak power. First attempt was to eliminate them, but they couldn't eliminate them. U.S. wanted to do it, Britain wanted to do it, France wanted to do it. They still want to do it. But at any rate, China consolidated itself and began to develop. And of course, it stressed hygiene. It stressed the idea that medicine should be available to all, education available to all. And it had to develop industry. It had to collectivize agriculture, get it in some kind of order so that the country could feed itself and also eventually export products and import them, all those little things that economists talk about. So they did it. They accomplished that. And the U.S. and others cope with it and thought that they could find ways to penetrate through finance, business, or whatnot. They would work out ways to take over that economy, but they haven't been able to do it. So China's grown into a very significant state and player in the world. And here I want to emphasize something that you will hear on the Taylor Report. You're not going to hear it many places. And that is that China has a South-South philosophy. When it was admitted to the United Nations in 1971, it was through the efforts of African countries that the vote passed through the General Assembly, led by the African countries, and they celebrated their victory against colonialism, which was still trying to maintain the fiction that the government on this island of Taiwan, which is part of China, that was, according to the imperialist colonial order, that was supposed to be China. On Taiwan was the Kuomintang under Chiang Kai-shek, who had engaged himself in a struggle for power, and had lost, because a new word had been added to the concept of Republic of China. The word was People's Republic of China, which meant that it was going to serve all the people. You notice the United States is a republic, but it doesn't call itself a people's republic, because it's not. It's not a people's republic, although it's got the germ. It's got the germ in there, because they began their little constitution with the words, with the Declaration of Independence. They said, "We the people," and all socialist and progressive getting to be a pretty tired word, we should probably dispatch it, but all the people who want to have a popular government representing all the people put that in their language. It's always been noted, "We the people," it says. And that has been considered a big headache by the American ruling class, because the document is one of those contradictory, promissory note kind of documents. We're going to do this in the name of the people. So you get into a crisis like now, and the word people comes up a lot, because it turns out the place is being run by corporate people and finance people. I'm getting a little off from my point about Taiwan. Taiwan is called Republic of China. Today, we're getting a lot of noise about this, that Taiwan should be, they're trying to slip Taiwan into this discussion about China. And China was established, the Chinese People's Republic was established in 1949, but the imperialist kept it, would not allow them to be in the United Nations. So it was only in 71 that it happened. And it happened because of the African countries. And I stress this because at this moment, Africa is facing this Corona 19 matter too. And the country that is sending them material and medical personnel, etc., and helping is China. And so this is part of understanding the world we live in. This is where there's a fork in the road between those who want to have bourgeois republics, capitalist system, and those who want to have people's governments. And Henry Kissinger, for example, who gets quoted, he's back in the news. Every time there's a crisis, they go to him like a Yoda or something under a rock, and he comes out and looks for his shadow and all that kind of stuff, and then says something, goes back under his rock. Well, he always said that the south didn't count. The only matter that counted was east, west. He meant Europe, the big guys, the ones with all the dough, all the stuff that they had stolen for centuries on as colonial powers, all those thieves. So he says only the thieves are the only people who count. But the Chinese are part of the anti-colonial movement. They're not the only member either, but they understand themselves to be part of recovery from imperialism. Recovery from imperialism. That's who China is, and that's why they reach to the other countries, particularly those who help them. There's this, we're living in a moment when we have this silly thing going on that China's trying to take advantage of this moment and to be nice to people. Actually, this is what Diana Johnson calls framing, false framing of a story. If you listen to China, they say, these people were kind to us. The other people of the South America and of Asia, South Asia and of Africa, they were kind to us and we're being kind back. They're not saying they invented the idea of mutuality and common support for one another, particularly in the battle to overcome the power of finance capital located in Paris and New York and London, and don't leave out Berlin. I wish you were still Bonn personally. Berlin, that's another story. But so that's the reality. Going back to the Chinese and to Taiwan, and to understand this, because right at this moment, the United States and Canada are trying to delegitimize China at a time when China is showing itself to be a world leader. So you see what's going on. The imperialists are losing their grip. They hold, like Kissinger thinks, they hold the world in their little fist. And therefore, they don't like it when they're challenged. And so there's a little drumbeat about, Taiwan. Well, listen, in 1971, the world agreed that Taiwan is part of China. One China, and Taiwan's part of it. They have not taken it over because they're not militaristic or imperialistic in the way they solve their problems. They understand that the U.S. and its allies invested a bundle in that group in Taiwan that was established by Chiang Kai-shek. So they understand that this is something that's going to take time and patience to work out. But what we're seeing is a desire on the part of Washington, particularly Washington, to turn this around and to try to undo the understanding, the agreement, that there is one China and Taiwan is part of that China, because they're terrified of this socialist society run by a really a group of highly competent people. People, very competent. And they're frightened of that. So they're trying to undermine it. And they want us to talk about it. And the Globe and Mail is quite willing to run its mouth. And the New York Times and Washington Post. But they're daydreaming. And it's dangerous for us. We the people ought to object to that. We the people should say we're not interested in your panic over losing your fear that you're not going to be able to dictate to the world. live in the world as equals with mutual respect with other states. That should be our demand, a clear demand. Stop trying to engage in regime change wherever you go. When we say regime change, model everybody after Washington and Ottawa. Stop doing it. We have to object in Canada to this, because actually we're finding there's every reason to be good friends with China. There's every reason to be good friends with Russia. There's every reason to be good friends with Cuba. Every reason to be good friends with Venezuela. And that isn't happening because we're led by people who are interested only in their monopolies and their financial institutions and salting away what they steal. And that policy causes conflict and could cause war. And any war will be started from here, because that's the language. If you listen to Pompeo or Chrystia Freeland, these people, they want to meddle. They want to see if they can arm reactionary groups, arm them in Syria, another country with whom we should have good relations. We should have excellent relations with them. Syria is a republic. It is a socialist, and it wants to go to be developed on its own in a way determined by its own people, a sovereign country. We should say good for them. At the moment, in Canada, there is more talk about, wouldn't it be nice if we were sovereign? Wouldn't it be nice if we were a little bit more independent? Now that the U.S. has hinted that they might put an army on the border, when they say to our country, no, you can't have those medical supplies, even though we have an agreement. No, you can't do that. When you hear that, then 2 days later, we're working on that. We're going to solve that little problem. No, that ain't going to be solved. You have a country that says it is an exceptional country. It is in this, what is the word? Indispensable. Indispensable country. Well, when it defines itself that way, it is also saying, you're not, Canada, you're not indispensable. You're not exceptional. We are. So you're already starting behind the eight ball. You haven't got a prayer. You're kidding yourself. So let's stop kidding ourselves and let's have some warmer relations with other countries who long since stopped kidding themselves and have insisted on their right to be sovereign, their right to have relations with whom they wish to have relations, and their right to live peacefully within their own borders and not be molested, such as Syria and previously Libya, that got clobbered with Canada's help. Canada bombs Libya at the direction of Hillary Clinton and others. So that's where we are. We have to talk about how we're going to improve our relations and not let them deteriorate. Improve them, not let them deteriorate. And to focus on this today, one more word before I say focus on. Let's go back to Taiwan or something to remember. That's a trick, you know. There's a trick involved that you want to be very alert to. It's called Taiwan. Its actual name is Republic of China. And so when they call it Taiwan, they're kind of playing with us. Because it's a pretender to be leading the entire country, the 1.4 billion of China. That's its pretension. That's what actually says it is. While it engages in the game of being Taiwan, and while the White House and others say, oh, isn't that interesting, Taiwan? Actually, I can remember when they used to call it Formosa. Formosa. As a matter of fact, in California, there was a United States Senator. His name was Bill Nolan. He loved Chiang Kai-shek, and Chiang Kai-shek loved him. And Madam Chang, I don't know if anybody knows this, Madam Chang spent more time in San Francisco than she did in Republic of China, Taiwan, Formosa. They've changed its name several times over because they're playing games. So we should say enough of these games. It's one China, it's the People's Republic of China. And we're very impressed that they use that word people. That's nice. That is a concept. Because if you know yourself to be an ordinary person, you know you're part of the people. And so the People's Republic, that would indicate that you have some rights, that somebody respects you, that if a crisis happens, they might worry about the people. So, yeah, Taiwan is actually, its real name is Republic of China, and it's a pretender, and it's a well-armed pretender. And the U.S. makes sure it's well-armed, because the U.S. actually has China encircled, and all they think about 24 hours a day is what they're going to do, how they can control this country, which is becoming a developing great power. And it's already a great power in that it has self-respect. And it is not interested in being tread upon. If you know one of the most inspiring ideas of the American War of Independence against the British was, don't tread on me. And it was a snake cut into pieces, and they knew that if they could put the pieces together, they would be strong enough to fight back. That was when Britain was the big shot, and the 13 colonies were causing a headache. And they said, don't tread on me. That's an idea, another viral idea, because the Chinese don't feel like being tread on either. And the days when you could tread on them are long, long past. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. The theme is, the question is, the U.S. biting its own tail like a rabid, I hate to say this, but metaphor comes to mind, a rabid dog. It is being shown up. As I'm talking, 15,000 Americans are dead from the COVID-19. 15,000. China was the first country to experience the breakout of the COVID-19. They have contained it and eliminated it for the most part. Yes, they are concerned. They're keeping an eye out, because the first duty of any state is to protect the lives of its citizens. And they can't say, oh, the banks. No. The bank would take care of the banks, would take care of the people. And so they had to make the decision, and they made it, to put the city of Wuhan, 11 million people, and under what is called a lockdown, quarantine. And then quarantines are not doing history. Quarantines have been there a long time. And it's one of the ways the system fights back when it has something that is spreading in the population, and they have no way of being sure what it is, and they want to corral it and overcome it. It has happened many times in history. We're getting better at fighting this. So there is an organization, the World Health Organization. China is a member. United States is a member. Canada is a member. They were notified, and they notified the world in January. This thing is being fought. Anybody who now says, oh, well, you should have told us this, you should have told us that, they told you something kind of important, pal. They said, they identified it, they gave you the genome, that was in January, so that you could, once the genome was identified, then they could create a test. That was January, a test could be created. We're still arguing, it is now early, not so early, April, and we're still talking about, well, are we going to test or not? And add that to the subject that we're going to go back to work. Well, sure, go back to work, provided you provide tests. Workers don't have to just drop dead to make your system go. And by the way, if you're going to ask people to work and you're going to do all this stuff, you better listen then to the workers. The workers have got to make a bunch of demands, and they have to say, we're not doing any of this unless you protect us. And don't tell me you're protecting the big farmer, and don't tell me you're protecting the big manufacturer and his, you've already given, we watched you, you brought your dump trucks and loaded them with money and dumped them into the to the banks and the manufacturers. It's not them that produces all this stuff. It's the workers produce that. And so you can make all the agreements you want. But if you're not going to protect people, and when by now I'm talking about protect their livelihood, protect their homes, protect their rent, protect them from hunger, sign on the dotted line. If you're not going to do that, nobody should cooperate with you. Who the hell are you? Corbyn is gone, but the idea of we are many, they are few, is abroad in the land. People know this, so pay attention. So here we are with this circumstance, that warning in January, which once it's gone up, the job falls to you. The People's Republic of China, actually South Korea, Singapore, these are countries, places, and including the island of Taiwan, where they took the matter very seriously. They all went to work and did what they needed to do, which is, first of all, is testing, and yes, isolating those who had the virus or appeared to have it, so that they could contain it. So they did, they went to work and did these things. South Korea learned on the same day as the United States all that they needed to know, and that was mid-January. I think it was January the 17th. And they went to work, and they tested. And you think back, ancient history, middle of January, January 17th. South Korea kind of startled everybody by having starting to doing 10,000 tests a day. And that was impressive, and they had the drive-through where you could go and be tested. All of anybody listening, this is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. They knew that you had to do this, and so the question was, can we do that? And the answer, oh, we don't need to do that. Oh, we're thinking about doing that. We might do that. Maybe we'll do that. But this is the dog biting his own tail. This actually, I hate to say it, there's some kind of odd idea that your neighbor gets ill, but you don't. That's a very bad idea. And there was a kind of thing looking. We thought, oh, look over the Pacific. They're way over there, and they have this problem. That's probably because they're communists or something, some sort of idea like that. And we're the greatest nation. We're the greatest people. Nothing like us ever was. That's Carl Sandburg. Well, anyhow, that kind of hubris gets you in a lot of trouble. And so they didn't think testing. I don't even know if they think testing is going to work now, because we're dealing with pretty mediocre people. I'm going to tell you something. Watch closely what's going on, and you can spot if you go around the internet. And you're free to do that. Please use your courage. Get up your courage and read a Chinese newspaper. Get up your courage and read a Syrian paper. Get up your courage and read a Cuban paper. Get up your courage and read a Venezuelan paper. I know that they're being blocked, by the way, and that there's all kinds of big shots are telling us, don't you dare, don't read that, that's bad, bad, bad. However, if you read them, and if you watch, you notice, one of the things you notice is they don't seem quite as wacky when they talk about the world. When you see Trump bumping into the podium and looking around like he's in the ballpark and saying ignorant things, followed by people like Pompeo, who is a motor mouth, can hold his head steady. I guess he was in the military. Hold his head steady while he says nonsensical things, but they really are nonsensical. So when you see that, you say, gee, those guys seem to have something. So that you should probably pay attention. And they are our neighbors. None of them are asking for trouble. It's our leaders who are asking for trouble with them. And that's why we should be raising our voices right now, saying we want peace, we want mutual respect, and we want to fight this thing together with the other peoples of the world. Other peoples of the world. We want to be with them. And that it should be our dream in life, that we be with them. And our leaders should be working to do that. Instead, we're getting talk about just tearing up, ripping up the World Health Organization. Why is Trump mad at the World Health Organization? Because he's been shown up. Shown up. It's embarrassing. So I read in the Toronto Star today, they say, there are people in, and this is the way they phrase it, people, criticism of the World Health Organization, including Trump. No. See, that's what Diana Johnson calls framing it. You misframed that. Trump is leading now the attack on the World Health Organization because they said nice things about a country that he is in the business of demonizing. You can't say nice things about a country that he wants to demonize. Can't do it. So we're all going to have to join in and bite our tails and make a mess of ourselves because he has a problem. U.S. has a problem. They're not the People's Republic of America. They are now a monopoly-ridden mess. There was a time if you would have said the 1%, everybody said, you must be some kind of Marxist crazy man. Now everybody says it. Bernie Sanders ran a campaign for the leadership of the Democratic Party, and which he had millions of followers, and that's what he said, because it's true. And that little gang doesn't care a lot about you, me. They figure money's number one, and they have another slogan. I'm all right, Jack. It's me. I have the Cayman Islands. I got my stash. I have my yacht. I can do all those things. And the little people will have to suffer. So ideas like, People's Republic, big success. That is, they in a country of 1.4 billion, had the Wuhan. In Wuhan, they had a virus which could kill a lot of people if it wasn't contained. They contained it. China is functioning at the moment. Wuhan is reopening, even though CNN and the Globe and Mail they all run, they're in the butt department now. Yeah, it's open, but. They're back at work, but. They're all but. Starting with Trump, everything is but. But the fact is, using my own, the fact is that they are functioning, and the trains are running. The subways are running. And you know what is nice? They love the people because they check everybody to make sure they're okay. That's a job of a government. There are people who say, I just want to run free naked. You know, I want to be me. I want to be etc. It's all malarkey. You live in a society. What is the old line? Myself is my environment. If I cannot save my environment, how can I save myself? We're stuck with one another. The individualism can only function within a common desire, element of mutual respect, mutual support. That is something we have not achieved here. And for the rugged individualists, I would say something interesting. I think you ought to understand there's 1.4 million people in China. They've just crushed the coronavirus at 4,000 at tops, 4,000 death. That, and I know the quibblers thought, oh, it must be more than that. Well, go ahead and quibble if you want. But the fact is that they have built the hospitals, they've treated people, they've closed the emergency hospitals, and they're open now. So there's, and they only lost 4,000 dead. Country of 1.4 billion. So this is, you have to understand that 1.4 are, that's 1.4 billion individuals. Each one of them is an individual. Each one has value. And they were able to save and protect that 1.4 billion people. They didn't say, well, let's just let this thing run and see how many we lose, and then we'll all laugh about it later. Who's going to do the laughing? So they understood their duty as a country to protect its people. It's a fact. It's just a headache that Washington's going to have to live with. And they are, and it is a headache. They're going to try to tear up the World Health Organization. They're going to try to tear up the United Nations. They're going to try to tear up one another. Even NATO may get torn up. Because with the U.S., the main thing is they're number one. And they have to have information dominance. That's why they're beginning to bark and snap at each other. Because the U.S. intends to make the narrative their own narrative. They cannot live in a where they have to be equal with other countries, where other countries get to speak. That is something they cannot tolerate. And that's where the problem lies. And that's why that's where our battle is right now. No, do not tear up international organizations. You can improve them. You can definitely improve the United Nations. You can definitely improve the treaties of the world, the ones that the United States tore up. And let me mention, while I'm saying that, Iran, Islamic Republic, everybody, including the CBC in particular, went out of its way to smear and laugh at and treat with contempt Iran. Oh, look, they're run by mullahs. Oh, look, Khamenei said something nasty about Mr. Pompeo, which, by the way, would be perfectly in order. They did a thing, they found, they posted stupid smears. They had a photograph of what they said was a mass grave. It was a cemetery. Cemeteries are mass graves. So they had a picture of a cemetery, and they did cartwheels and smacked their lips like a bunch of morons. So, by the way, I think that Canada is approaching the same number of deaths as Iran. Probably there already. The United States is, whoa, way past Iran. Whoa, way, way past. But let us do our little CBC exercise, cartwheel, smack your lips. You found a picture of a guy licking a monument, and that therefore they must be a crazed population, etc. Actually, they did a very good job under brutal, criminal, cruel sanctions. Brilliant job of fighting this virus. And they have held the numbers down. They have gone through, they've walked through the fire, and they've come out. And that has to be credited. Same with Syria, fighting a war. And they don't, and they're under sanctions. So these things are all going, this is why the U.S. is bent on tearing up all these treaties and everything else, because all these treaties, all these international institutions expose them. And we should be opposed to that. But we don't have leaders who dare say anything. We don't have a government that dares say a word, because they're petrified of the United States. And that's not a good thing. The fear, the biggest fear that is causing our intellectual and mental problems in Canada is a fear of Washington. It's not the pandemic fear. It's a fear of a great power that reminds us openly, nakedly, can harm us. That's a fact. That's and we have some people, very proud on the Taylor Report. We spoke to Dimitri, I started calling him Rosopoulos, Dimitri Lascaris, who has an excellent candidacy for the Green Party. We applaud him. He's calling for, let's have the relations with Venezuela. There's the end of sanctions. It's end of sanctions on Iran, Syria, these people, these countries, because they are illegal. And so that this is a fight for our common humanity. Now, I've come to a point where I think I should read you something. And again, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I propose something quite subversive. That is, that you use the internet to read the opinions of other countries. Why? For your own sanity. Just read what they say. If you were to listen to your mentors at the Globe and the Star, they say, don't read that. Don't read that, because that's propaganda. As though they're not providing propaganda. Here's my proposal. Read propaganda. That is, read what the spokespersons for the various parties have to say. Then meditate on that and see if you can come up with your own opinion. But if you, I would say, you have to seek truth from facts, and if you haven't investigated, you haven't any right to speak. Those are old slogans, but I'm going to remind you of them. They're good ones. You could say those are mottos. You should go by them. Anyway, I am always interested when a guy like Pompeo sounds off, and he's quoted this way. I'm interested in what the response is from those he abuses. I listen to what Syria has to say about Pompeo. I listen to what Iran has to say about Pompeo. Not because I believe think that I'm going to get the gospel, but because if I don't listen to them, how am I going to have the faintest idea what the argument is about? So here's a from a press conference today, I think. This would be the 9th, April 9th, question at Chinese Foreign Ministry. The question, U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo said in an interview, we're under an enormous challenge here with this virus, and it began in Wuhan, China. The U.S. tried to get into China, and they weren't successful at the front end. And they quote Pompeo, when you hide, when you obfuscate, when you penalize people who come forward and who want to talk about what really happened, that's just unacceptable. That's what he's quoted. And then the guy says, he also said, in a time of crisis, you find out that the value of transparency, transparency to Pompeo, and the idea that we have in America of liberty, So what's your response? So the Chinese foreign minister spokesperson says, I'll make the following comments. First, China was the first country to report the novel coronavirus outbreak in the World Health Organization, but that does not mean that the virus originated in Wuhan. An epidemic can originate in any city, county, or region of the world. The origin of the virus is a serious scientific issue. It should be addressed by scientists and medical experts. On April 8, Wuhan breathed a new life after a 76-day lockdown was lifted, boosting confidence in the global fight against the virus. There is a growing recognition that China's approach has worked, and that China's experience is worth learning from. Any responsible country will stand firm against the unjustifiable practice of labeling viruses. Second, so-called China cover-up and intransparency is groundless. We repeatedly talked about the timeline of detailed communication between China and the U.S. After the outbreak of the virus, China immediately reported it to the World Health Organization, shared the genetic sequence with other countries, and carried out international cooperation among experts in epidemic prevention and control, which received positive feedback from the international community. The U.S. has unfettered access to information and data on the outbreak from China. At the end of January this year, the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention and other research teams published articles on medical journals of international prestige like the New England Journal of Medicine and the Lancet, introducing to the world the research results of Chinese scientists on the epidemiological features of COVID-19. In February, scientists from the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health participated in a joint mission of experts from China and the World Health Organization and got a comprehensive understanding of the epidemic situation and prevention and control efforts in China through field visits. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the U.S. National Institute of Energy and Infectious Diseases, believed that it was with China's genetic code in hand that the U.S. scientists can start vaccine development work rapidly. China has done what it can and should do. As for whether the U.S. has made full and effective use of the precious time and important information China has gained, and whether it has taken timely measures to prevent and control the virus, I believe time will tell. Third, the stigmatization of China is unpopular. Viruses know no borders, no races, and no social systems. All countries should always put their people's right to life and health first and provide adequate and effective protection. Under the leadership of the Communist Party of China, China's fight against the epidemic has achieved remarkable results. Slanders and accusations on others won't make oneself immune from the virus. We hope that the American people can also overcome the epidemic at an early date and resist the narrow-minded approach of certain politicians who politicize the epidemic and stigmatize China to shift the blame. That's the Chinese Foreign Ministry commenting on this matter. And I say again, we have to learn how to deal with propaganda for one country. Why should the narrative that we all talk about every day be under that of the United States? Why can't we make sure that we're listening to all the parties? It's very simple to do that. And I ask you to be courageous and actually listen when Pompeo talks about somebody. Make sure you go to the party being talked about and ask them what their reply is. That's natural justice. You understand about natural justice? Work on it. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It is 89.5 FM. And Wuhan, be strong. Toronto, be strong. Canada, be strong. Serve the people. Protect the people. Provide the necessary support for one another. People, put the people first. This is the Taylor Report, CIT. See you next week.
CIUT 89.5 FM encourages all of our listeners to stay informed about the status of the COVID-19 virus and how it could potentially impact you. CIUT FM recommends that you visit reputable online sites to keep abreast of the latest news and any actions or directives that officials may be delivering. For more information and current updates about the COVID-19 virus, the following resources are made available to you. From Toronto Board of Health, visit www.toronto.ca. www.ontario.ca. From Ontario Ministry of Health, please go to www.ontario.ca. For federal updates, you may go to www.canada.ca. CIUT-FM will continue to play its role as a community radio partner to ensure that you have the information you may require to keep yourself protected and safe. CIUT 89.5 FM, bringing you the sound and news of your city.
Your radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.